lesson text tonight will come from Job, the second chapter, verses 1 through 6. Job 2, 1 through 6, if you'd like to read along with me. Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said to Satan, "Where have you come from?" Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "From roaming about on the earth and walking around on it." And the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? For there is no one like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil. And he still holds fast his integrity, although you enticed me against him to ruin him without cause." And Satan answered the Lord and said, "Skin for skin, yes, all that a man has, he will give for his life. However, put forth thy hand now and touch his bone and his flesh. He will curse thee to thy face." So the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, he is in your power. Only spare his life."
The problem of human suffering is one of the biggest problems with which we have to deal. Recently, Brother Kippy Myers taught three lessons, I believe it was on Wednesday night here in the auditorium, dealing with the subject of human suffering. I've had the privilege of listening to those by tape, and some of you who did not get to hear those might want to check those tapes out and listen to them, because he covered in detail what I'm only touching on tonight, and I thought gave some suggestions that were especially helpful. The problem of human suffering has caused some to doubt God. The idea of suffering and evil in this world is one of the points that is used, perhaps one of the biggest points that is used by those who claim to be atheists, those who claim to be agnostics, when they begin talking about the subject of God. There's probably not a one of us but who has been touched with some kind of suffering, most of us in a personal way at one time or another, some more than others. And if not in a personal way, as we have been associated with those who were our loved ones and are our loved ones and our friends, the people whom we know. This is not an easy subject, and I suggest to you up front that I certainly do not have all the answers. And I think one of the reasons that I do not have all the answers and that you do not is the fact that God's ways are higher than our ways and his thoughts higher than our thoughts, as explained in Isaiah 55. There are two things that I want to emphasize tonight and try to get across. And I think if we can understand these two things, that it will help us as we deal with personal problems and as we share with others as they deal with it. The first one is that human suffering is not parallel to the kind of life that a person is living. What I mean by that is that whether or not we are sick, and whether or not we suffer is not parallel to whether or not we are good or bad. We sometimes quote that passage that says it rains on the just and the unjust. And I think we realize from that that God's blessings flow even upon those who do not deserve it. In a sense, none of us deserve it. But even to those who are not even trying to live for him. And at the same time, we understand that problems come to those who are doing their very best to live for God on a daily basis. Psalm 73 is one of my favorite psalms. You might just make a note and try to read that psalm this week. Brother Alan Hires talked on it on Wednesday night at 5:45 back sometime this past school year. It is a psalm where the first 16 verses are used to sort of suggest, I look out and I see the evil prospering, and I see God's people suffering, and I begin to wonder. And then verse 17 says, "Until I went into the sanctuary of God, then understood I their end, and realized that though the evil ones may have many good things today and seemingly do not suffer sometimes like Christian people do, that in the end of it all, they're the ones who are going to not have God. They're the ones who are going to really suffer." And I think the key verse to that psalm is verse 17, where he says, "Until I began to try to look at it from the standpoint of God. And though you and I cannot understand the mind of God and think on his level, perhaps if we will try our best to look at things from God's standpoint, as he is able to see the panoramic view, Instead of getting bogged down into what is happening today or tomorrow, it may help us to have better lives and to face the difficulties that come. The second thing that I want to get across tonight is that God is still in power. Though we may not understand how God does some things and why God does some things, even in our own personal lives, we have evidence in God's Word, and we have evidence in every sense of the word, that God is still in charge. And He knows what He's doing. Even His Son did not maybe understand everything that was involved as He prayed there in the Garden of Gethsemane and asked if it be possible to let that cup of suffering pass from Him. But you remember the end result of His prayer, and the end part of it was, let the will of God be done. And even though we may not understand everything that is happening, we may not be able to explain it to ourselves or to others, based upon the knowledge of God's Word and everything that supports that, we can believe that God is still in charge. The reason that I ask Adam to read from Job chapter 2 is because of two words that are said there in verse 3. I have read Job several times. I'm sure you have too. But I don't think I had ever noticed the last two words in verse 3 of chapter 2 until just recently. I was reading through that, and those two words really stuck out as I thought about what I'm trying to present to you tonight. In the conversation between God and the devil, God said, I'm allowing you to inflict these things upon Job without cause. Without cause. Now, we are aware of the fact that throughout the book of Job, we have the conversations between his friends and him in which they basically are saying, Job, you must have done something that's really bad to be suffering in the way that you are. And Job knew that he had not. He knew that he had been faithful to God. He did not understand what was happening. He could not explain it. He even says in the 9th chapter, if God were to ask 1,000 questions, could man answer them? Suggesting that he did not know what was taking place. But he did know that God was still in charge. And as God talks to Satan here, he says, Satan, I'm allowing you to do this to Job. And you remember there were different stages where he allowed him to do some things at first, and then the devil came back and said, let me do more things, all of this, and he'll deny you. And God said, okay, anything except you can't take his life. But in all of this, God says, you're inflicting this upon Job without cause. It's not something that Job has done himself that is bad, that is bringing this suffering upon him. And folks, I believe that is so important for us to understand tonight. Sometimes when I'm talking to people who are facing difficulties, they'll say, I must have done something really bad, or God would not let this happen to me. That's not the way it is. And we look sometimes and we see people that prosper in so many ways, and we say, well, that person must be really good. God is allowing him to accomplish so much in so many ways. That's not the way it is. That's not the way God works. When we have problems, when we have illness, we have a tendency to either blame God or to blame ourselves. And those are not the two that need to be blamed. Sometimes self may need to be blamed, but many times self is not the blame for what takes place in life. Job had not caused his illness. And again, I emphasize that the suffering that we have and the problems that we face are not parallel to how good or how bad we are. Let me give you two or three examples in the Bible that I think point that out. You remember Paul's thorn in the flesh in 2 Corinthians 12? I don't know what that was, but I believe from the way it is expressed, especially with the use of the word flesh, that it had to do with some kind of physical suffering. Paul asked that God remove that. And God said, no. He said, I'll give you the grace to bear it, and I'll help you to bear it, but I'm not going to remove it. Now, I realize that the earlier part of Paul's life was not good, but during the time that he was a preacher of the gospel and was serving God, can you think of anybody that did a better job and a better work than Paul did? If anybody was deserving of having a problem removed from his life, would it not have been the Apostle Paul at the time that he's writing this letter with all that he's doing for God? But God knew what was best for Paul. I cannot explain it. You cannot explain it. Paul could not explain it. But God knew what was best for Paul. And here, one of the greatest preachers of the gospel that ever lived, one of the greatest Christians that ever lived, God said, no, I'm not going to remove that thorn in the flesh. If anybody deserved, by the kind of life and dedication and commitment that he had, to have it removed, it would have been Paul. But God said, no. On another occasion, Paul says in 2 Timothy 4:20 that I left Trophimus sick in Miletus, or Miletum. Trophimus evidently was a co-worker with Paul. Now, why didn't God heal this man that was a co-worker with Paul? Paul, with the powers that he had, could be used at that time. Why didn't he heal everybody that worked with him? Surely this man, if he is a co-worker, was deserving of being healed if he based it just upon the kind of life that he was living. But Paul said, no, I left him sick. And this points out to us that God's people get sick. God allows his people to get sick, and sometimes even to face very serious illness. I think a comparison or a contrast between Hezekiah and Moses will point out to us that God doesn't work on the principle that how good you are determines how free you are of illness and suffering, and how bad you are means that you would have more. Hezekiah, who was not the best of kings, in 2 Kings 20 and Isaiah 38, both recording this, was told that he was going to die and not live, to get his house in order, indicating that something was not in order at that point. Hezekiah turned and begged God to lengthen his life. And God decided to lengthen it 15 years. On the other hand, as Moses came to the time that the children of Israel were going over into the land of Canaan, God would not listen to him and lengthen his life that he might go over into the land of Canaan. You're familiar with the problem that Moses had at the time that they received water from the rock in Numbers about chapter 20. In Deuteronomy, the third chapter, Moses begged God to change his mind. God had said, because of this incident, you go ahead and lead the children of Israel, but I won't let you go over into the land of Canaan. In that third chapter of Deuteronomy, it's be something almost like a prayer. At least Moses was communicating with God, and he pleaded with God to lengthen his life and let him go over into the land of Canaan. God said, no, not going to do it. Now, this is one of the reasons why I said earlier in the lesson, I cannot explain to you why God does as he does and how some people can get well and some do not, and some have serious illnesses and others do not. But I am convinced that here's a case where Hezekiah, who at least it seems to me was not nearly as deserving as Moses would have been, had his life lengthened 15 years. And Moses' life was not lengthened, even though he pleaded with God. God allowed him to die and buried him there on Pisgah at Mount Nebo and would not lengthen his life. Sometimes as we're praying for those that are seriously ill, I try to keep some of these points in mind. In fact, I say to families sometimes, I'm not for sure that I know for what we should pray, except that we pray especially that God's will be done. Are there times when it might be better that one's life is not lengthened? Paul says, at least in Philippians 1, that in his case, there was a time when he thought it was far better to go on and be with Christ. And I think we need to be careful sometimes as we ask God for the things that we want, and it's not wrong for us to want, and it's not wrong for us to even be a bit selfish, I suppose, when we're dealing with ourselves and our family and our friends. But we always need to keep before us that God knows what is best. And it's not always based upon how good a person is or how bad a person is as to how God answers our prayers and what the end result is. We need also to understand in connection with this that there are different causes of sin. Yes, sometimes we do cause our problems. I believe those who smoke, I believe those who drink alcoholic beverage, I believe those who use drugs, in the sense you know what I'm talking about, may very well be bringing problems upon themselves. And sometimes some of the sins that we commit bring about problems. Case in point. The problem of AIDS could be solved in a generation if we would identify sin for what it is. There are those who are innocent. There are things that happen. You know that. But in the main, one of the biggest problems that we have in America is brought about because of sin, because of the violation of God's will. And in many instances, people have brought it on themselves. But even in connection with that, innocent people also suffer. It's extremely difficult for me to watch a program on television that talks about these cocaine babies. Realize that a little innocent baby is born addicted to cocaine because of the sin and the problems of its mother and maybe others involved. That baby didn't cause that. It was caused by sin, perhaps, in that case, but not the sin of that baby. Sometimes our problems are caused by the sin of others. Look at the crimes that have taken place even in the last few months, where innocent people have been shot and killed because of a problem that someone else had. 1960, just a few months after Judy and I were married, a drunk driver came across the road and hit the car in which she, her father, and mother were riding. Killed, right in the prime of his life as a gospel preacher. Her mother never walked again. Judy spent days in the hospital. The man who was under the influence of alcohol didn't get a scratch. And 2 weeks later, when an insurance man went by to check with him, he was drinking again. I don't understand that. I cannot explain it to you. It's been almost 40 years. I cannot understand that. I cannot explain it. I don't believe the problem that took Brother Anderson in death was anything that he had done. Sometimes there are accidents that take place. There are laws of nature that are involved. The law of gravity, for example, is there. And the law of gravity sometimes may affect us that can cause broken limbs in a fall or other associated problems. God has set his laws of nature in effect, and they apply to those of us that are Christians just as well as they do to those that are not Christians. And then when we've said everything, we've got to come back to that devil that's talked about there in Job 2. Notice God said he was roaming place to place on the earth. He was everywhere then, and he's everywhere now. As a roaring lion going about, 1 Peter 5:8, what, seeking whom he may devour? Don't kid yourself. The devil is well and at work. 2 Corinthians 2:11, Paul said, we're not ignorant of his devices, indicating that the devil has many devices that he uses to hurt us and to take us away from God or to try to take us away from God. And because of this, I'm convinced that there are many factors that may be involved in why people get sick, why people suffer. And the one thing I want you to see above everything else as we're dealing with this point is that the amount of sickness and illness and suffering that we have is not based upon how good we are or how bad we are. We may contribute to the problem. We may do some things that can hurt the body or hurt the mind. But there are many other factors involved. And particularly for one who is trying to live for God as Job was, I think God would say in your case today, just like he did with Job, that he's allowing the devil to tempt you without cause. And you don't need to get the idea that because you have an illness or you suffer or bad things happen in life, that means that you're any less of a Christian or that God loves you any less. And the second point is a continuation to that. And that is the answer that we have. Sometimes they're just little verses that we quote so often, but we don't stop to think about what they mean. Such is the case of 1 Corinthians 10:13. There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. God will not suffer you to be tempted above that you are able, but will with the temptation provide a way of escape. That says two things. God won't let you be tempted. He won't let you face anything that's above your ability. He did in Job. He stopped the devil at a certain point. He said, you can't go any further than this. God will not allow us to be tempted above that we are able. Sometimes it may be that we just don't understand how we're going to do it. And then the second thing that's in that verse is, he says, with that temptation, he will provide a way. God didn't say he'd take every bad thing out of our lives and that there would never be any problems and never any suffering. But he did say there will be a way that you can bear it and you can meet it. And he even said in Psalms 55 and verse 22 that the burdens that you and I cannot bear, we cast on him. He will not allow his people to be burdened above that they are able. He will sustain the righteous. Again, sometimes I don't understand how. And I've said many times as we were talking, maybe in a little bit of a joking way, but I think there's so much truth in it. Sometimes I wish God would hurry up a little bit in how he's going to help us to solve some of these problems. That's not a problem on his part. That's a problem of lack of faith on my part. Because, you see, he provides the way of escape. He provides the grace, as he said, with Paul's thorn in the flesh for us to bear it. And above all of that, he's always there. I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. Hebrews 13 and verse 5. Casting all your cares on the Lord, for he careth for you. 1 Peter 5 verses 6 and 7. Perhaps all of us, especially those of us who are facing illnesses, serious illnesses, and problems along that line need to memorize these last verses, particularly Hebrews 13:5, and be able to quote it on every occasion. I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. Sometimes we allow ourselves to begin to think, without even admitting it to ourselves, that we were meant to spend an eternity here on earth. It's hard for us to face the fact that we're just passing through. It's hard for us to really tell ourselves, even those of us that have been Christians for years and years, that heaven is what matters, and being able even to die in the Lord is really what matters. And maybe it's because we do not face these facts that we have more difficulty facing the affairs of life on a regular basis. But God has said, I will be with you. Two things, and I think these are extremely important. When you get sick, when you suffer, when you face problems, don't ever think that it's because of something you have done. If you have contributed to it, take care of that. But remember, he said, Job is suffering without cause. It's not what Job did. It's what God was allowing to happen as a part of his overall plan. And no matter what comes, God is going to be there. He is going to be there to help. And even promises in that beloved 23rd Psalm that he'll be there in the valley of the shadow of death. We will face death. Some of us that are here tonight may not live very long. Some of us may live longer than others. Unless the Lord returns and ends the whole thing, you and I are going to face death. And many of us may face some serious illnesses as we come toward that. But we have a shepherd that will go with us even through the valley of the shadow of death. And that makes all the difference in the world. Now, I'll admit, if you're not a Christian, I don't see how you face times that are difficult. I just don't understand that. I don't understand how somebody could be facing cancer, for example, and not be right with God. Maybe facing the possibility of immediate death or death soon in the future and not right with God. I don't understand that. Because even with God's help, sometimes we have difficult moments. What it must be like for those who don't have God. But there's no reason for anyone tonight leaving this building without being right with God. I'll guarantee you, if you live for God, all things will work out in the end in the right way. And that's what matters. If you're not a Christian or not faithful, come as together we stand and sing.
What a glory he sheds on us.